But I'm not an expert. Bruce Williamson is. He's with the campaign group Real Futures. And the story, of course, is pegged on the issue of Southern Rail lodging a legal appeal in a bid to prevent further industrial action by its own workforce. It has lost control of the labour relations situation. And, of course, it's a byword for lateness and cancellation. So let's hear what Bruce has to say on this whole picture. Bruce, thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening, George.
Just summarise, if you would, the state of play on Southern Rail, first of all.
Well, it's a shambles, isn't it? I think you've summed it up quite well. Industrial relations have sort of gone from bad to worse, and Southern are very much the villains of the piece at the moment. And as you rightly say, when it comes to a company going to court to prevent its own workers from striking, then things have gone very badly wrong, haven't they?
Indeed. And it's not just the labour relations, is it? Although the management appears to have mishandled that. Why can't they make the trains run on time? Is it the sheer scale of the commuter land, the number of passengers, what?
There's all sorts of factors involved. There's decades of underinvestment. There's the fact that railway numbers, passenger numbers, have doubled in the last 20 years, and we haven't matched that with a doubling of the number of carriages or rail lines or stations. So inevitably, you have to cram more and more people into the existing rolling stock that we have. And whilst there is some investment going on the railway, which is very welcome, it's not really keeping up with the ever-growing demand, despite the government's best efforts to price us off the railways by increasing fares every year.
Yes, exactly. Onto roads which are environmentally damaging, more and more jam-packed, accidents everywhere and so on. It all highlights the complete lack of a national transport policy, a national plan for transport. And that, of course, is a product of privatisation, isn't it?
Well, I think privatisation has certainly thrown an extra level of complexity into the whole sort of railway network. And I would certainly agree that there has almost never been an integrated national plan for transport, which would be a good thing, actually. There is, in terms of investment, what we're suffering from is stop, start, feast and famine. And there is, as you probably know, electrification going on the Great Western Main Line, which has stalled. That's in no one's interest, and I have grave concerns about that, particularly as they haven't given us a date or any indication when it's going to be unstalled again. So we'll have the sort of the fiasco of these lovely, shiny, new electric trains going halfway to Bristol and then switching to diesel, which is not ideal.
No, not ideal. And, of course, all the while, they're pressing on with HS2, which will affect, of course, only one line, whilst the rest of the trains are running late and packed and overpriced.
Indeed, but I mean, the HS2 is an example of a new line that's going to increase capacity, and we need that. Part of the problem is caused by the lack of capacity, as I mentioned earlier. We haven't had a doubling in the number of lines in the last 20 years, whilst we have had a doubling of the number of passengers. So clearly, something's got to give. So new lines or alternatively reopened lines are always very welcome. But I don't want to sound sort of like a greedy kid in a sweet shop, but it's never enough. You know what I mean?
Of course I do. Now, I've met some gin and jag golf club bores on Southern Rail who are nonetheless fully converted to the idea, Jeremy Corbyn's idea of renationalising the railways. Where does the campaign stand on that?
Well, we're sort of neutral, but I mean, I certainly recognise that nationalisation is a popular policy, or renationalisation is a popular policy, and certainly there would be some advantages, well, undoubtedly quite many advantages, in having an integrated whole. You'll be aware of the recent announcement of Chris Grayling that he's going to kind of go halfway to doing that in terms of integration, but going in the opposite direction by allowing the train operating companies some control over the maintenance of the lines in their patch. Now, that idea has some merit, because, like I say, very obviously, track and train go together. They inevitably do. So if you're managing them together, that has some natural advantages. However, my concern on the other side of the fence is that we're introducing an extra layer of bureaucracy in the railway network as a whole. And also we run the risk of further fragmenting network rail, because obviously you'll have to have a network rail representative in every franchise region of the country. And this has been tried before. There have been two experiments, two schemes. Southwest Trains had a sort of alliance with Network Rail. I think it was called the Southwest Trains Alliance. And similarly, it's been tried in Scotland. And like I say, it's an obvious idea. You integrate track and train. But on both those examples, it hasn't proved particularly successful and has been quietly dropped. So I fear the same may happen with this idea.
I don't just fear it. I'm certain of it. You're a gentleman and a scholar. Thank you very much, Bruce Williamson of Rail Futures, the campaign group on the crisis on British railways. Tell me what you think. 0344.